This is a Channel Africa podcast. You can also get Channel Africa on satellite, PAS 10, DSTV Audio Bouquet 802, and OpenView Bouquet, Channel 628.
Imagine being born in the northernmost of a province of South Africa, then being raised in a township, to ultimately getting chosen from a pool of 3,000 applicants to become one of 25 that win full scholarships to a prestigious all-boys school, where you graduate from high school and end up touring the world with your gifts as a multi-disciplined artist. This is a true story of South African-born artist Gigs Honamotse Hole, who has an eclectic interest in drawing, architecture, film, and design. He joins me on the line. Gigs, good evening and welcome to Africa Tonight.
Oh, good evening. Thank you so much for having me. You know, it's such a beautiful moment when you hear somebody say your name and your middle name and your surname, and it's just like, it's so validating. It's because I'm always like in places where people don't know how to pronounce it correctly, and then, so you just saying it right now just reminding me like, home.
It is a pleasure having you on the show, man, as we try to talk about your journey in the art space, because you have had such an illustrious career at such a young age. Hey, how do you feel about that?
I'm truly blessed, honestly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I can't believe it. It feels like a movie to me. Mm. But then, you know, you realize that, you know, this is... you've put it out into the universe, you've worked for it, you've spent the hours, you're meeting people, and also you're just really blessed to have like maybe grown up the way you've grown up, and people sort of see that light and that kindness and I guess like humility in you when they meet you, and then ohulakabatu from there.
Talking about ohulakabatu, you grew up in Limpopo, in some rural village in Limpopo there. How was it like growing up in Limpopo?
First of all, just quiet apologies for like any background noises. I'm just at a festival town, and so the town is celebrating this music festival that I'm collaborating on. Growing up in Limpopo was a very, very, very interesting time, because, you know, my life was just herding goats, so the booty, being out on the fields, just spending a lot of time just like learning nature, learning about like my culture, also learning from like my grandmother, as she would like go pick up like cow dung, and then the cow dung into like an insulation for Mundlong. So just watching all of that, the rituals that we practice back home, just learning about dire tojaka, the family tree, which was like, it was just a good, uptight and close upbringing, because then, you know, you live in like this hut area and you're living in there with like maybe 10 to 15 people, and you guys are cuddled up, and during winter like in the kitchen and the stove. And then just from there, it's just like learning life lessons from like every single person in the family.
Yeah.
So it was always like quite a humble, very quiet and beautiful childhood.
But
filled with adventure.
Yeah, an adventure indeed. But you showed signs of, you know, being an artistic child from a very young age. Talk to me about your family. Is your family artistic at all?
You know, in the forefront, not artistic in the sense like, I believe like my family is very artistic, but they just don't understand that they are artists. Because we're talking about like crafts in terms of like my mom with her sewing and weaving of like lohora, so straw mats, even plastic mats, and just my grandmother with how she would sort of teach me with like textures, like how I would see in terms of like the textures she uses in terms of like building the home. So for me, also looking at my cousins and my brothers, they would like take mud on the side of the river and then make tractors and then make these beautiful cars. And then also like also making, you know, when you'd make the string wire cars
mm.
and how you'd use recycled sort of cans to like make the wheels, and you'd make the gearing and the steering wheel. So just looking at all those different crafters and our kids making toys allowed me to also explore my hands and to explore what I can create from like nature or the substances that we have around mm-hmm. us.
And would you say that looking at those crafts from a very young age, Geeks, has that shaped the brand of your artwork?
I think to an extent, the stories and the freedom to use multimedia has definitely shaped that. As a lot of my work sort of explore stories within my travels around the world, my travels in South Africa and in Africa, and the way I would use materials would be sort of like using materials that have like a significance to a certain location, and I remove it from that location into a new site.
Mm.
And then creating conversations on how, you know, if we have a traditional pumpkin that's used for watering, what is it then called when it's then put on an art piece?
Yeah.
And then so, and with that, for a show I had in Miami last year, I took the pumpkin watering cup that we would use when I was growing up. And so this pumpkin watering cup is about 20 years old, and I'm 25 right now. So it's one of like the longest standing object that I have, found object in my family.
Yeah.
And so before my grandmother threw that away, I sort of then remembered like artists such as like Marcel Duchamp would use found objects and put them in new places and in galleries, and sort of then it questions like, oh, if there's a urinal that's taken from its original place and put in the gallery, is it then called art? Wow. And then so that's what I also explore too in terms of like African materials that we have and things I collect on my journeys.
But take me back to grade 6, because I believe that something Oof. Magical happened when you applied for a scholarship with the student sponsorship program. Talk to me about that moment when you were selected as one of the beneficiaries of this scholarship program. How did that make you feel?
You know, it was completely, truly magical, and I felt so connected with just for like the universe, my family, and prayer a lot. Because during that time, I had applied for the sort of the position a month late, but my mom still had so much faith that she said, let's put through the application and let's see what happens. And then even though I was late, I was given an opportunity to write an exam, even though I had less time to study for it. But it's just then that's the lesson I learned as a 12-year-old, is that, you know, if you show up to something, you show up to a place, even if you don't have much, if you just give it your all and you try, it's better than not trying at all.
Yeah.
And then so then making it through, like being selected from the 3,000, it was all just pretty much going to Saturday school every single Saturday for the whole World Cup in 2010. But then as like a young kid, like you're riding a taxi by yourself and you're taking about 5 to 6 taxis to like another side of the sort of the city, you start learning like how to explore and how to move out of your comfort zone. So I think that also really helped me in terms of then being able to move out of my comfort zone and in terms of like exploring the world as soon as I finished high school.
Yeah, because I believe you were the first person to attend a private high school.
Oh, yes.
And also the first person in your family to reach and pass matric. That must have been incredible for you.
Oh, no. It's a collective thing. It's like it's incredible for me and my family.
Yeah, yeah. But
it's something we work for.
But talk to me about the education. How did your formal education prepare you for your life and your career choice?
My formal education really sort of prepared me in the sense of understanding life skills that I need to know, like how to communicate, how to navigate, how to be in spaces, how to stand out, how to be a gentleman, and how to be a good human being. So I feel like beyond, because the school I was in was called St. John's College, beyond the classroom, we learned so much in terms of like life skills from our sort of teachers, our sporting coaches, and sort of the church itself, the Anglican Church. So I think for me, it really kind of allowed me to navigate sort of foreign spaces in the world, foreign cultures, and then also understanding that, you know, sometimes you need to assimilate and know when not to assimilate and remember where you come from too. So I think that's the most important thing, is like, and in that people appreciate, because that's part of your identity too.
Yeah. But let's delve deeper to talk a bit more about your brand of artwork here, Geeks, because your work is characterized by the use of anaglyphs. I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly. What on earth is that?
Oh, so an anaglyph. So, so it's pretty much the separation of images with colors. So a red lens, because you see color. Our, in terms of like our pictures, we have red, blue and yellow. So the primary color. So I'm just pretty much in my work from the age of 4 years. I mean, from the age of 14, 15, I wanted to create a sculpture. So. And wanting to create the sculpture, I didn't have the funding to create the sculpture, but then my art teacher told me that, hey, Giggs, you can do research around what the word sculpture entails. And then doing research around that, you know, you think about words like illusion and deception, space, and then you look at movement. So then in doing that, I was like, oh, I want to actually maybe create a 3D movie, and I use that as my sculpture. Then from grade, pretty much from grade 9 to matric, learned how to make a 3D movie, but then I felt like something was missing. And then I just spoke to my art teacher about that, and then she told me about, hey, you know, looking at the film that you're making, it reminds me of these glasses that I used to wear back in the day. Then it reminded me that, you know, 3D movies back in the day, we used the red and the blue lens. How can I turn mine into like a similar 3D movie with that? So just being a very artistic and scientific kid, I sort of then started editing and teaching myself how to then turn a movie into like an anaglyph film. And then with that anaglyph film, I then spoke about like my rites of passage as a young man, and just growing up in Limpopo and then moving to Joburg.
But just talking about those pieces, talk to me about the thought process, the creative process that goes into putting together all of these beautiful art pieces that you have been crafting for years now.
Yeah, I think the creative process is like, I think a lot of the works come from just visions that I have, my travels. And so in order to like capture that and those moments and those thoughts, what I do is I keep writing journals, or I sketch ideas out, and just like a dream journal. And then when I'm in the studio, I love being in a quiet space, sometimes a space where it's quite warm, play music, and then you just look at this canvas, and then you know it's just a white canvas, and then you just know it's like it's infinity, so you can create anything and absolutely. And then that's the funny thing with like, even with my surname Hole, like it's like far, so it's like I always look at like the canvas, is like, you know, this canvas can take you anywhere you want. It's like, what's the direction?
But how does it make you feel, Geeks, when you hear people marvel at your artwork, when they come to your exhibitions and marvel at such amazing artworks that you have crafted?
I don't know. I think it depends on the day, hey? To be honest. It depends on the day. I've had days where, like... it's just, wow, it's really, really, really marveling. And you realize like, wow, so I wasn't sitting in that studio crazy and for hours upon hours sweating and for nothing. And people actually understand, and people want to know, and they're drawn to this. Mm-hmm. There's been times where people have come up to me and told me like, you know, this artwork saved my life. And then when you think about that, you realize like, wow, it's not just like you're not just creating pretty images. You're creating something that's historical. You're creating something that's leaving, that's going to leave a legacy. You're creating something that's going to be in art history, but you're also creating something that's very beneficial right now, which is savings. Like, it's not saving the world, but it could save somebody's life or give somebody an introspective about history. And then you start realizing that, you know, I have to paint my truth all the time because I am documenting history. Like the next Bujero Tsokoto.
Yeah.
So we have to remember that. So I think it's always depends on the day. Like sometimes I'm very happy. Sometimes I feel like I'm not doing enough.
But who are you targeting with your artwork gigs?
In terms of the work itself, I'm targeting in terms of viewership. I want everybody to come view my work. In terms of people who can buy it, because there's price ranges that range for people who are entry level collectors or just collectors in general. But I just want more South African and African, Black African collectors in my collections.
Yeah. But the year 2018 as well marked a new feat for you, as you became one of Africa's youngest gallery owners at the age of 21. Joe, how did that make you feel?
I mean, that made me feel so honored that I was put in like a position of leadership in terms to help, to help and to promote and to give to the arts and give to other people, to give to young people. Just like with that exhibition, this is where I met my first, one of my close art brothers, Franz Talker. And giving Franz that opportunity to showcase his work there. And even just before he even showcased his work, it was just like, you know, when you meet somebody who's got amazing aura, good energy, and you believe in that person, and sort of like somebody, you know, you can really invest in and you know will do so much good. You just have those connections with people, and I just remember, like, I couldn't allow myself to like carry on with like the space of our like having a show with Franz's work there. So over the years he's developed to be such an extraordinary amazing artist who inspires me completely every single day. And then these artists that I was able to then meet, like Motlacho. And then so with these exhibitions, it has helped me sort of like create a network of artists in South Africa, but also understand, like, you know, a lot of these spaces that people get to exhibit in South Africa sort of kind of gatekeeps who can showcase and who can't showcase. Because the reality is, in the gallery spaces, if a gallery has 36 artists, and there's 12 months of the year, and you're exhibiting one person a month, not everybody's works get to be shown on the wall.
Wow. And talking about people who inspire you, because I see that you were also named as the Mail and Guardian's top 200 young South Africans, and you also won the People's Choice Awards for your masterpiece, God Imam, which was the catalogue cover of the 10th anniversary Young Masters Art Prize in London. Talk to me about God Imam before we talk about the people that you look up to.
Okay. That piece, such a touching piece, in the sense that I think after when I started the piece in 2018, towards the end of 2018, I was going through so much in terms of like my personal life. I had just gotten through two car accidents and then lost friendships. And then just like my mental health at the time was just declining so much that I felt like I wanted to give up in terms of like giving up on art. And then so just doing that, going back home, so I always go back to recharge. I think my sort of my mom and my sister and my grandmother saw that I've lost sort of this light and this hope because of like this little hiccup that I'm going through. Because, you know, sometimes as young people, we feel like we can't afford to fail. We have to succeed all the time. Yeah. And I think I was just in a stage in my life where I felt like I needed to succeed and that I couldn't fail. And then having failed like 50 times that 1 year in 2018, I just felt like, wow, maybe if you don't try, then it's better. But then my grandmother sat me down, and then she just reminded me about the essence of life. She reminded me like the importance of like how what I've done has helped the family, is helping my community, and it's helped me personally in terms of growing as a young man. And then as she was just talking to me, I was kind of then, for the first time in a really long time, being in such a dark space, I sort of saw God for the first time, and I just saw it in these women, like my grandmother. And then I just, when I went back to the city, that was the first thing I painted, I completed. It was just the God gave Mama peace, and then took it to France.
Yeah, it sounds like family support was pivotal in your journey, Gigs. But let's talk about the people you mentioned earlier, Gerald Sikoto. Let's talk about the people who have that you have looked up to, who have influenced your career, because I do understand that a person such as Jean-Michel Basquiat is also amongst those who have influenced your career. Talk to me about your influences.
In terms of my influences, it's so hilarious. The first time I got to come across Basquiat's work was in 2018. So I had just turned, I think, 20 or 21 at the time. But then I've had five or six people in like three different countries saying like, yo, you give me Basquiat energy, you give me Basquiat energy. And then so then watching his documentary and seeing like the life he's lived, and then I was just like, wow, drawing the parallels here are just so amazing. And then so then that influence of like just honoring him and honoring the work that he's done, you know, what he's had to go through as a young man living in New York, I then incorporated sort of like the crown in it. Because growing up, I was always called like by my cousins or people around Hoshi, Hoshi. So then it was like, you know, the symbol of Hoshi is the crown that I adopted from Basquiat. And then I've had like a lot of like, influences from mostly with Gerald Sikoto is his life after exile. So what he's been doing in terms of living in Paris, living in France, like just his personal life, because sometimes when I'm abroad and I'm studying abroad, or just traveling, I do feel a bit of like that exile. And I feel like I want to channel and understand like how did a lot of our forefathers sort of like deal with being displaced and being put in new places in the world and having to start a new life and how to build community. And then so within that, I'm able to like gain inspiration and sort of like a different edge towards where how I treat the canvas that I work with, how I treat the musical projects that I work on, how I treat the friendships and the idea of exhibitions that I want to have, and how what messages I'm trying to get to people in the world, and how am I trying to inspire the next generation of masters.
Talking about inspiring the next generation, I do understand that you wanted to become one of Africa's leading artists by the time you turn 30. Do you feel you are on course to achieve that?
I think when the time when that was a goal in my life, I think I was very young and I didn't understand and didn't see much of the world as I have between the ages of 21 to like now 25. Life has kind of just shown me like, you know, because, you know, you achieve something and then there's something bigger, and then you achieve something, there's something bigger. And then, but I've also understood that with time, it's like, it's also with this world that I live in, it's all about like connections and who you're working with. And also like, how do you then keep the soul in terms of building something meaningful, but also being in a position of power to make sure you make change. So with that, time will tell, but I'm happy with like the path I'm on right now and the amount of good I've done.
No, because with the amazing artworks that you create, Gigs, come on, you can become one of Africa's leading artists. It is possible.
World artist is the goal.
Is the goal. That's okay.
Yeah.
you've got to dream big,
the
man.
The answer comes out. It's the whole goal. It's like dealing with like how do you become the top five in the world?
Yeah, no,
and
that is possible.
Imagine what
that's
going to bring to South Africa and Africa.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are things that keep me up at night.
All right, cool. Talking about things that keep you up at night and taking the world by storm with your art pieces, I do understand that you are talking to us all the way from Italy. What is happening there?
Right, today's been a wild, wild, wild day. So we're in Saremo, which is a town just up north of Italy. Mm-hmm. And then so what's happening in the next 5 days is the Saremo Festival is happening, which is like one of the biggest music festivals that the country enjoys every single year. I'm here to support one of my closest friends here, Leo Guzman, who is performing and as well as has his team of artists and friends and collaborators who are all coming together to root him on. As on the project, everybody has a role to play. And I was then producing the album covers. And then we have then people working on digital things and other aspects of like the music and the album.
Yeah. All right, Geeks, we are unfortunately out of time, but we are so proud of you. Before we wrap, talk to me about how people can access your amazing work.
Right. People can follow me on Instagram, which is @Hole_ so and KGOLE. If you Google search Geeks Hole, you'll be able to find my website. So it's geekshole.com. And with the website, you'll be able to see the profile, the past work, past exhibitions, upcoming exhibitions, and as well as all socials.
All right, Geeks Hole. It has been a pleasure, my brother, having you on the show. We wish you all the best. And yeah, may the Almighty bless you, my brother. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me, and keep warm up there for me.
That podcast was courtesy of Channel Africa, the African perspective.